Hello and welcome to the Little Minds Big Ideas podcast with the Early Years Network. We're a day late this week.
Yeah, but it was a bank holiday. It's actually a bank holiday.
That's a virtual film on the bank holiday.
This will be out tomorrow.
No, it will be out tomorrow. We're filming on a Monday. Happy Monday, but
normally we record
on Tuesday.
Everything the week before, so.
We do. I wasn't very well last Friday, though, so we...
It's lingering, this cold with you, isn't it?
It is. I'm very sorry, everybody.
And you could tell more because of the podcast.
I don't know, it's just snotty or coffee. It's ridiculous, though, because it's coming in waves now, but and it seems to have hit me this morning, but it's fine.
You'll be okay. We'll get through it.
We'll be okay.
I believe in you.
Thank you. So... this week, we are going to talk about gender stereotypes.
We are.
What that looks like in early years, the reasons for it around society and things, and then what we can do to sort of break those.
It's an interesting one, is gender stereotypes, because... Oh, I'm going to jump ahead now.
Go ahead.
I find it an interesting conversation because it brings to light that whole... Nature versus nurture. And it really shines a light on the importance of nurturing, the importance of experience, you know, the type of things we talk a lot.
Yeah.
We talk about brain development and brain structure and all that jazz. Regardless of what your view of it is, regardless of what research says at this time versus what it will say in 10, 15, 20 years' time, it's evident that experience is king.
Yeah.
And the experiences children have in terms of what creates based upon societal norms, based upon our expectations as parents and educators, experience is the fundamentally most important thing. So it's really interesting to dive into this conversation because there's some parts when we talk about natural, what the body's about and what the brain's about, and your expectations probably will influence that will have on stereotypes and gender preference. It's actually a lot more minimal than you probably think it's going to be.
Which kind of highlights that your environments around you and your experiences are going to play more of a role. I think it's an interesting one because when we talked before, sort of what we're going to jump into this episode with, you find some of these conversations quite difficult in terms of gender stereotyping because you kind of said a man being masculine shouldn't be a negative and a female being feminine shouldn't be. And I completely agree with that. But it also is on the flip side, if a woman's a little bit more masculine or if a bloke's a little bit more feminine, that shouldn't be a negative either.
I think the thing is, I always come back to when we talk about diversity and we talk about being proud of where we are from in terms of that element of things, cultural. And we talk about even like just little things like accents and the colour of your skin and things like that. I just think the world would be, we're trying to force ourselves to get to a point where everyone is the same. And I think that's a mistake.
But I don't think we're trying to force everyone to be the same. I think we're forcing encouraging people to be themselves.
I know. And
that's where it's difficult
it comes all the way down to being tolerant and inclusive, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what it is. It's inclusive.
As opposed to trying to change everyone. It's like saying, like for football, for example, I know this is quite a niche reference I'm going to make now, but because of football violence, because some idiots couldn't go to watch a football game without having to get into a fight, you get rid of all clubs, so it's all just the same now. So Team A plays Team B, and that's what it's referenced, rather than Leeds versus Manchester or Tottenham versus Arsenal. Right. So to get rid of that rivalry, we just create everyone as English Football Club 1 versus English Football Club 2. But it just loses the whole thing what it's about, doesn't it? I know it doesn't, but that's what I'm trying to say. Like, we don't want to lose the little things about society that make people proud to be British or make people proud to be from South Sudan or from Ecuador.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But I think what we're trying to do with like gender stereotyping and where we look at it now is that I don't care what you are, who you are, what you like, what you dislike. That shouldn't impact your view on someone.
Yeah.
As long as nobody's being hurt and nobody's being offended or nobody's getting, do you know what I mean? Shouldn't matter. I mean, I'm a big football fan.
Yeah.
And I have two sisters and we've all been season ticket holders for our club with my dad for years and years and years. And I've never felt uncomfortable at a football game. And I've been to all sorts of grounds.
But you being a female and enjoying football doesn't mean you're being masculine.
No, I think that connotation is stupid.
You could be girly and enjoy going to the football.
Of course. And that's what I'm saying. But the gender stereotype is that men go to football and women don't.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the big campaign now of Her Game Too, which is sort of hoping to make football more inclusive. But then you're going to say about women's football.
I was going to say the funny thing.
How women don't watch women's football.
The funny thing about women's football is, and people always just go on and go on, and women don't watch women's football.
Do you know what I think it is, though? I grew up watching my team.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's my team. If I'd have grown up watching a women's club and that was the team I went to every week, they'd be my club and they'd be my team.
You can't, you personally, though, with your football club, can't use the fact
I can. It's they have old got a women's
and
team.
And entrenched in society when it was only created like 15
I
years
ago. I had a season ticket for 17 years.
And the club's
over
existed for how many?
Of my life. 20. Over, but that's for me, that over half of my life I've been a football fan of this club.
Yeah.
So, but if that club was a female club, they would be my team. There's a lot of young children now who are growing up watching women's football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
and it will take
hopefully
time.
It will take time. Clubs don't just gain a fan base. So whether they're female or males growing up with female clubs, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah. The difficulty
we've gone on a bit of a
I know we have, but
here.
The difficulty with football is, like I say, it's so entrenched. I don't get up in the morning and think, oh, I wonder which male football team I'd like to go watch because I don't want to watch women's football. It's rubbish. It's, I'm going to go watch Leeds United. Like,
yeah.
That's what I've grown up with. Yeah. That's what's entrenched in me. And actually, our season ticket, my season ticket, if you actually go directly behind me, directly to left, right, and front, I'm actually surrounded by more women, I think, than men. Because there's two girls behind me. There's two older ladies directly in front. Like, there's a lot of women in the vicinity,
yeah,
which is great. You know, it's great to see a diversity of people there supporting one thing. I would never go, oh, it's because it's men's, it's better. I just think for women's football to grow, you have to start seeing 10, 20, 30,000 women watching it. Because if you go to Elland Road and you go watch Leeds United play, it's still 90% men.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Without a doubt. So you need to see that same population.
But that will have to grow with the popularity of the sport.
Take time.
I wasn't going to mention my football club, but I bet people can guess now. I don't like to tell people.
Anyway, should we get back onto point?
But it's still controversial. Yeah, let's get back to it. So understanding gender stereotypes. So when we talk about stereotypes, we talk about...
I think there's three big things here. There's toys.
There's colours.
Well, there's clothing.
Yeah, clothing, colours. Yeah.
And then there's the parental preferences and expectations that are then set upon children.
Yeah. I mean, I did it yesterday. I went to a baby shower for my friend and she's having a baby girl. So the theme like she'd done was pink and things like that. And I was so like in my head about the fact I was wearing a green cardigan.
All your friends turned up in green?
No, green, blue, brown, lots of pink trousers.
She got a lot of you were in green and brown, like beige.
I was in my head about the fact, oh my God, it's a girl's baby shower and I'm in green. But why? Like it doesn't matter.
No, no. But that's the thing.
I never wear pink. I'm a girl.
But that's the thing. It comes down to external factors.
Exactly.
Your environment when you're born.
Yeah. So let's go with clothing to start with.
Go on.
You do see more now of, I'm going to say like girl clothing with like dinosaurs on and things like that. That's becoming more and more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's as they get into like toddlers and a little bit older. I think for babies, it is very much like you can buy the neutral stuff or you can buy blues and pinks. Like or you mix it up. It doesn't really matter, but it's still split girl, boy.
Yeah, and even when you go into the shops, we had to wander around Next the other day, didn't we?
Oh, some of the clothes are gorgeous.
Because your friend's having a baby and even that's split. And you can see this sort of trying. But even I, without realising... was like, oh, we're not in the boys section now. Because like it changed from being all like pinks and peaches to like more dark blues and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous, isn't it? The fact that a colour... because you bought that as you get older. I would wear something pink and you'd wear something blue. Like it's not the end of the world. We're sort of on brand a little bit, but it sort of loses its touch and its meaning a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's the same with toys, you know, toy preferences.
Yeah.
We can talk about boys liking cars and diggers and girls playing with dolls and kitchens. Role-playing kitchens and things like that. These stereotypes come from somewhere.
They do. Of course they do.
No child's born as a girl and thinks, oh, what? Mum, he's made a mistake. I'm wearing blue. So, hey, I should be in pink. That's my assigned colour. Come on now. Let's go play with the dolls.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen. It's learned. And even from the age of babies, even from like 9 months or something, children are very adept at spotting patterns of behaviour, spotting cues, and they get it from parents, early as educators.
It's the thing that they see as well, though. So if our friend was having a baby boy, I can guarantee a majority of the clothes would have had little dinosaurs, little blue trucks, football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the clothes that I've bought her have been pinks and pale colours with little fruits on and little cuddly animals. Like, it's all just a little bit softer.
Yeah. It's almost like you're ingrained into a cult from day one.
Okay. Yeah. And but don't get me wrong, I think all baby clothes are cute. You could put any child in a t-shirt with a little duck on and it's adorable. So I think it's the way you perceive it. Because if the baby onesie that's got the duck on was blue, it's for a boy. But if it was pink, it's for a girl. But just make it all like neutral yellows and greens and anyone can wear it. Do you know what I mean?
But that's what I'm trying to say. I don't want the answer to be, oh, well, don't be scared to put a girl in pink because you abide in my general norms. Like,
but if they get older and want to wear blue, let them wear blue.
But the difficult thing is, these stereotypes are so ingrained into society.
100%, we're never going to get away
from
them.
So ingrained. Even everybody listening to this, even if you try your hardest, you will also be ingrained into this way of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to shake that.
Yeah, of course it is.
It's impossible to get rid of, but little steps will make a big difference. I mean, if we went back 100 years, people in society would genuinely believe that males are inherently more intelligent than females, biologically. Like, that was just a fact if you went, like, I don't know, 100 odd years ago. In the same way, if you went back in further into time, they would also have the same idea about white people versus black people. They inherently would have believed that whites were just superior.
Superior, yeah.
So we can break down. I mean, that 100, 200, 300 years isn't that long.
No.
It's not that much of a length of a time period. So it'd be interesting to see where we get to in 100, 200, 300 years. Like I say, I just hope we don't get to the point where everyone's just...
the same, robotic.
Neutral. Because at that point, I think
it's more like we talked about, it's more about inclusivity. It's more about if your child chooses a t-shirt that you wouldn't necessarily deem as what they should be wearing, if they've chosen it, they've made that decision to be self-confident in it and believe in themselves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then they let them wear it. If it's a little boy and they choose a doll, it doesn't mean that they're going to turn out gay, because that is what parents have said to me in the past.
Wear a dress.
My child can't do dressing up because they'll be gay. Like,
horrifying some dads, doesn't it?
First of all, doesn't matter if your child's gay. That shouldn't bother you for a start off. But secondly, actually, if your child plays with dolls, they might turn into a loving father. They might turn into a caring individual who wants to nurture other people, which is a bad thing.
Well, the thing is, a lot of the stereotypes come from parental praise. So children, the wiring in their brain works upon a lot of the time, obviously experiences, yeah, and then is that
positive experience
positively reinforced or negatively reinforced? And thus, if you're praising children for conforming to gender stereotypes, technically you are securing those beliefs. And then as they get older and older and older, they become more and more secure in those stereotypes. It's a difficult one because listening to this then makes you sound like, oh, well, if you inform a gender stereotype, that's wrong. It's not wrong at all.
No.
But there's a middle line between just allowing people, and in this case, children, to just do what they enjoy.
That's what I'm saying. Happy. Yeah, just let them do what they want to do.
It's a really difficult one because we will naturally praise and if there was a family of four, let's say, and dad had a football season ticket and mum wanted to go shopping, inherently, if they had a boy and a girl, I can see how it would just naturally be split. Yeah. Like, it's obvious, isn't it? Whereas, should it be?
No, it shouldn't be that obvious. No, but then it's hard because the girl probably genuinely does love spending time with mum and going shopping, and the boy likes the season ticket and going to football, but that shouldn't be stopped. And I don't think that's what we're trying to get at. I think it's trying to say, if your little girl is obsessed with football, don't take the opportunity away from her.
Yeah.
Let her go to the games.
It's treating her with the same opportunities. Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's giving the children equal opportunities and then letting them decide.
Yeah.
If they actually just naturally want to conform to a lot of the societal norms. And
that's fine.
Allow it.
It's interesting. I follow a couple in social media, Francis and Stuart. So it's two dads. They've got two kids, a little boy and a little girl now. And... their oldest, Rio, does gymnastics and dance. And this weekend, they took him to his first football class. And one of the dads was like, I'm not doing it. Like, you're taking it.
How old is he?
He's two.
Oh, crikey, that is very early.
Yeah, the little boy's two. But he does loads of classes, like likes things, likes being outdoors and things.
So if a two-year-old struggled to balance and run in a straight line, let alone kick
well,
a ball
actually.
At the same time.
But Francis was getting ready and he was like, is this what football dads wear? Like, he had like a big fluffy coat and he was like, I'll have my sunglasses. And he's quite a flamboyant character.
He needs to get his CP and Stone Island out.
Yeah. So, but he was like, am I mocking now football dads? Like, I'm not meaning to mock football. I'm not a football dad. Like, I don't know what.
He's the hood with the glasses.
Yeah, it does. But it was quite interesting because it's one of those where, oh, this little boy's got two dads, so he'll probably never play football because his dads are really camping into musical theatre and things. Mm. But they've crossed that barrier and it's like, no, my child is interested in football. Does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, he does all sorts of things and he goes to shows as well, but it's opening that level of like, it shouldn't be a question. It shouldn't be out of the norm that two gay dads take their son to sport.
I went to, the first time I went to football as a child, I don't know why I remember this. I had to take a throw in and it was a really muddy day.
Did you slip?
No, I went to take the throw in, pin the ball up through it and I was just covered in mud and I remember just crying. Because I think it was cold and wet and I just went mud. I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing these things. So even then, a child can show a preference.
Yeah.
And I love football. Like, do you know what I mean? But as a child, if you watch me, I think, that kid hates it. Let him go home.
Let him go home. But I think what I was trying to say was it shouldn't, like, if I said to you, oh, there's a same-sex family there, what extracurricular sports or things do you think that child is into? You would have said, probably, dance.
No, I would not.
Society would have said. No. Society would have said, oh, that child definitely dances. Softer sports rather than...
But the thing is, though, it doesn't actually matter if they're two males, gay couple or not. Children, like we say, are affected by their experiences.
Exactly,
and
yes.
Thus, if parents are really, really into football, there's a strong opportunity that child will be into football. Or he'll hate football because that's what he'll be forced into and he just won't enjoy it. Like, if these parents are really into dance, like, that's why you see a lot of sportsmen's children will either be really into it and actually also quite good at it, or they'll hate it and they'll go to the other end of the spectrum. Yeah. You know, you look at like LeBron James, like all his kids play basketball.
LeBron James.
But I bet you there's famous children from sportsmen who hate the sport that their dad plays.
Don't
completely disconnected with it.
Yeah. I mean, if we ever have children, Lord help them.
Do you know,
I don't want them to be like you watching football. That'll be too much for me. I'll have to leave.
Do you know what? I actually think when we talk about gender stereotypes, this could be a bit controversial, but I actually think boys have it rougher nowadays than girls.
Go on.
Because a girl now, where we get into with it in terms of stereotypes, girls playing football and watching football, it's okay. We're like, we've got around that.
We keep saying football, sport in general.
Sport in general. Girls being tomboys isn't deemed as a negative thing anymore. Like the connotation of being a tomboy and embracing that element of it, but then also being a girly girl and going out, like those elements are now...
Accept.
They can move. You can move in and out. You can go shopping, dress up cute, and then go watch the football. Like that's acceptable.
They can.
Whereas a boy, if you got called a sissy, or whatever terminology you want to use around that, if boys wanted to interact with like females, go in and out of the two types of stereotypes, that's acceptable. Whereas if a boy went in and out of stereotypes, I think there's more of a prejudice towards that. Boys talking about their emotions and talking about their feelings. We're getting to the point now where in primary school and secondary schools, children, boys, are having a really difficult time talking about their emotions and their feelings. And I think we're starting to see the result of it still in further down the line.
I think that prejudice comes from males more than it does females.
Yeah. I'm not blaming anyone in particular.
I would probably say I'm more tolerant to changes of that behaviour than you would be.
Yeah. I think boys have a harder time fluidity throughout stereotypes than girls. I think that's probably what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I think we can do more in our base in early childhood to help that. I think a lot of it comes educating and working with parents around it.
I think that is a massive one because like you say, it's nine times out of 10, if a child's not allowed to get messy or get themselves dirty, it's a little girl who's not allowed to get her clothes messy. Or it's a boy who's not allowed to do dress up.
Yep.
That's kind of where it splits. And this is why I think that role play areas and kitchens having real life resources in them is really important. Because I'd like to hope that in a family home, you see mum and dad cooking, or you see both parents cooking doing things. So it shouldn't be unusual for a boy or a girl to want to cook in a home corner because they're seeing everybody cook. In our household, we both cook. And I don't think that would ever change. When I went to my dad's, super noodles, omelets at best, bless him. But he still cooked. He still made us food. So it wasn't weird that he was in the kitchen, even though my stepmom does now do all of the cooking. apart from the barbecue. That's a big one for men, though.
That's, again, isn't it, though?
That's a big
stereotype,
one.
Isn't it?
Yeah. My stepmom will cook every single meal, but as soon as the barbecue's out, my dad's like, move, I'm going
to
do it.
As soon as it comes to cooking outside, just the males like appear and suddenly they can cook, turning a bit of meat over.
It's not ready yet. It's not quite done. So a child being able to play in a role play area is fine because they're seeing everybody cook. If they have got nurturing parents on both sides and grandparents and things like that, playing with dolls and nurturing children isn't going to be unusual for them. So I think a parent's fear of their child getting involved in toys because they think it's going to make them one way or the other or whatever's going to happen to them is ridiculous. And it is about educating parents as much as the children.
But like I said, I was trying to make the point earlier. I think it's the boys.
Have it harder, 100%.
In a weird way, because then when you talk about stereotypes further down the line, and we talked a bit off air about builders, for example, and that females, you barely see any tradesmen who are female. And then you go down the whole conversation of, well, males are more physically stronger. That is a fact. Some women are stronger than men. If you go down to an individual basis, absolutely.
Yeah.
But overall, if you look at populace and you look at society, males are stronger than females. That is a fact. Yeah. So when it comes to industries where there's a lot of physical manual labour, makes sense. But at the same time, then you talked about plumbing and things where it's more maybe finer things. More to do with intellectual
and decorating and things.
Absolutely. And if we talk about employment opportunities, if both female and male went for it, it should be an even thing. I don't discontinue that. And then when you talk about pay gaps and all that, I'm not promoting, but I'm not ignoring that as a factor. But if we look at early childhood, which we are predominantly talking about, I think boys have it really difficult in terms of our stereotypes, what we inflict on them, either subconsciously or consciously. I think it's harder for them. Like I said earlier, I think girls
to navigate,
jump through stereotypes a lot easier because you go, oh, she's a bit of a tomboy. She's a bit, you know, she likes to get mucky and do those bits and pieces. Oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Like, Johnny, that's very okay. Whereas when a boy comes in, dresses and wants to paint his nails and dress up in fairy costumes and run around and do those type of things, some parents are very open to it and some people are absolutely fine, but also some aren't, and some will tell him off, so you can't do that things, you're not a girl.
Or they'll just go, whatever, like they don't show any interest in it. So it becomes like the child's not having that positive reaction they thought they would get, so they'll eventually stop wearing it and feeling good in it.
Or, like I wanted to talk about then, you enter into the sphere of when we talk about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And you go down a pattern of a child is naturally inclined to want to do something. They get enjoyment from doing it. But then externally, either from parent or practitioner or whatever it might be, they are, if not being told off, if not being told to do it, they're not engaging in a positive manner like they would if they did something else. You know, if he was out playing football and dad would be very much like potentially on it and reinforcing that behaviour and bonding. Whereas if he wanted to go do something else that was deemed a girl stereotype, he won't get that same reward. That will do one of two things. It'll either push the child to conform with that stereotype, or it'll push them to, but then he'll have the negative mental health aspect of it because suddenly then there's a battle has started already at this young age in his own brain of things he gets enjoyment and then social norms or the norms of that environment around him, that context around him. And mental health does start in the early years. Like it doesn't just start when the child gets to primary school or secondary school. Like mental health starts from day dot. And then you start talking about all those that you did on your class that's coming out potentially this week, potentially next week, where you talk about the chemicals that are released in the brain. If we're talking about dopamine and the release of dopamine from being rewarded for things you enjoy, the negative of that not being released, or the negative chemicals that then can come from it,
yeah,
are real and have a real effect on children in early years. And I just think that is an element I just wanted to touch upon in this, really, this conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, you said about it from parents and peers as well. It's from parents and practitioners, etc. It's also peers, because
yeah,
parents will have an impression on their own children, who will then take those views into a setting. And you say that might not happen in early years, but it does in preschools. You do see it, like if a boy is wearing a pink top or a dress or whatever,
yeah,
another child is likely to say, boys can't wear that.
Yeah.
Boys, but and that's come from somewhere. Like that child hasn't just magicked that opinion themselves. So they've heard somebody say that, and that's why they've taken it in. So even if that child's family are so accepting and so like loving of it and don't care, there is a potential that even in preschool that their peers are influencing what they will do. And that comes down to the mental health as well, because they're not receiving the positive reinforcement from their surroundings. And if this child's in nursery 5 days a week, that's a lot of pressure on them already.
And I think it's probably a good time to talk about it. We talked at the start about nature versus nurture.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. When you talk about nature and you talk about brain development and you talk about our understanding as a society of how the brain and the body works, it always has to be preferenced with our understanding now in 20, 30, 40 years time could be looked back on and go,
silly.
Like if you look at the understanding of the brain from the 1960s, 1970s versus now, research and everything's come on so much. So our understanding of it will always, like the brain, the human brain is so complex. Even now we think we have an idea of it. We think we understand through experience how we construct, how it's... The thing is, as human beings, we like things to be neatly, be able to put in boxes and be able to tell a story about it, and it's well organized. This is responsible for this, this can do this, this can do this, this. The brain doesn't work on that level. The brain is unorganized, but also highly organized. It's chaos, but it's very functional working chaos. It's only chaos because we struggle to get our head around what the hell's
going on.
So when we're talking about stereotypes, we're talking about children, and people often think, well, little boys just have higher endorphins running around their body, higher adrenaline, higher testosterone, all this jazz. That's why they're like more boisterous play. But the split between males and females from, let's just talk about testosterone, because that tends to be one of the biggest drivers of this.
Yeah.
That doesn't split. There isn't a split between a boy and a girl massively until we hit, what's it called?
Puberty.
Mm-hmm. When you hit puberty, and at that point, then the testes become more active in terms of producing testosterone, and then that circulates around the bloodstream and into the child more and more. At that point, there is a divide, there is a split, there's a clear split between boys and girls. But before that, and especially if we're talking about early childhood, there isn't biologically a huge difference between, or enough to categorize males and females in that way. And also then if you look at the brain, well, even from early childhood through to adults, there isn't you could look up a million different brain images and brain scans of human beings, there isn't anything that specifically divides males and females.
No.
We're more similar than we are different. And to be honest with you, male versus male, male versus male, male versus male, you're going to see different brains. Brains work in different ways in everyone.
Of course.
Different areas of different brains are more affect in terms of emotional development, in terms of cognitive, blah, blah, blah. It changes brain to brain. So you can't split them based on gender lines. So I think when we're having this conversation with that somewhat sort of evidence, I don't want to say evidence in terms of it's definitely factual, because
might be, yeah, research.
But in general, that's our idea of how it works. And that's our idea of how testosterone, that's fairly secure. So if that's the case, it goes to show that stereotypes and preferences of that nature are almost certainly environmentally born.
Yeah. I think that leads on to, so what can we do in early childhood? What do we do in early years settings? So resources have to be available to everyone. It doesn't matter who they are. Something that I just thought about was, I think we will tend to, let's look at risky play. Naturally, we tend to protect girls a little bit more than boys.
Yeah, and we have this stereotype of boisterous boys.
Boisterous boys. But if a child, if a girl was wanted to climb a tree and risk take, we always are a little bit more extra cautious.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but we just are. Like, that's how it is. But we still make those opportunities available to them. When we talk about emotions, everybody should have emotional check-ins.
Yeah.
Everyone should be open to talk about how they're feeling and why and expressing themselves. And yes, children will express themselves in different ways, but helping them to label them. And I do go into that in my mental health class.
And if anything, go more the other way and try and divulge your boys in your class to talk about feelings and their emotions more than you necessarily would your girls. Maybe that will counteract, but I think it's that having that language and that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And talking about your own emotions with the boys in the class as well and getting it more normal to discuss how we feel and the fact our emotions and things like that. And maybe that will help them as they progress and grow older.
Yeah. And I think that's something I do touch upon is that children are allowed to hear our emotions as well. Not constantly telling them that you've made me sad, because it's not the child that's made you sad. It's the behaviour that's made you sad. The child is still loved. The child is still respected and cared for and can have cuddles and things like that. We don't want to make the precedence that nobody's going to love them.
It's normalising the conversation.
But it's normalising the fact that you have just thrown a toy at me and that has hurt me. I still love you and I'm still going to cuddle you and it's not you that I'm sad with, but the behaviour you've just shown. But I know you've thrown that toy because you're feeling angry. Or do you feel angry? Because I always struggle with labelling it for them because I don't think I should tell someone how they feel.
Yeah.
It's a case of you've thrown this, somebody's taken your toy. Do you feel angry? Do you feel sad? So it's trying to help them work out what all those feelings are.
The thing
are.
Is, we're going down this kettle of fish here, but the thing is when you're that young, you struggle to know the difference between anger and sadness.
Like
it's very difficult for children to depict. Like we were having this conversation the other day off air about anxiety and depression. And in adults, we would struggle to, or a lot of adults struggled, and I think the majority of the population from these tests struggled to be able to describe the difference between emotions of anxiety versus emotions of depression and what that feels like. So if we're talking about children, they probably struggle with that emotion of anger, sadness. Like, and then we get the silly little face cards out that shows a generic version of anger and sadness. And again, we had this conversation the other day where those picture cards that we denote with happy, that we denote with sadness, like they actually aren't what we look like when we're happy and sad. Like they fundamentally don't actually
work. No, they're a good way to help children to understand different emotions.
Or is it?
Well, yeah. Because, we're not doing this now. We're not getting into this now. Another class
that's
for another time.
I think that's a class.
Yes, in itself. I think in terms of what we can do is making opportunities equal for everybody, allowing everybody to have involved. No, that's why continuous provision is so important. Resources should be accessible for everybody. And then it's working with parents that their child playing with certain toys isn't going to make them a certain way. It's not going to develop them into something different.
There's probably a class we could do around this in terms of having some sort of stereotype checklist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm clearly off the top of my head now. But having some sort of checklist that runs through of these, like, typical stereotypes and then do a review of your own practice
what
based upon...
to tackle?
Like, because it is really subconscious.
Yeah, 100%.
Have I got that the right way around? Unsubconscious?
It's in your subconscious.
Yeah, so you're not... You're not intentionally
doing
these things. You're subconsciously doing little things because we're all ingrained in that stereotype. We're all ingrained in the system, if you like, in quotation marks. Like, that is how we've come to understand boys and girls as stereotypes. Yeah. So there are little things intrinsically. And it goes down to such a minute level of colour of plates, water bottles, like bags that they bring to nursery. Like, when you look at it, it's all the smaller details.
That's something that really bugs me, though, when a child says, oh, can I have a pink cup? And they say, oh, no, you get what you give them. The child gets sad. Just give them the pink cup. Like, it really, like, why are you creating stress for that child when they've asked for something and for nobody, like, you're going to give it to the child next to them just to spot, like, it just really stresses me out.
That's just being mean.
Like, but it does happen. Like, no, you don't need the pink cup. You don't need it. Oh, they might need that cup. Like, they might need the pink cup. The little girl might need the pink cup. And I think what we're trying to get at here is that the girly things for girls and the boyish things for boys isn't a bad thing.
No.
But if children want to break that norm, let them.
I think it goes back down to our basic principles of following the interests of the child.
Child, yeah.
But it's important not to let... It is such a difficult one. It's near on impossible to not be stereotypical. Especially, I'm talking probably more for parents now.
Yeah.
It is absolutely impossible because stereotypes start before the child's even born. Like, look at the baby shower that you went to yesterday. Like, it is already happening and taking place and the child's not even here.
But that's for us, isn't it?
I know, but it that will then cascade. You're not just going to be like, right, child's born now, boom. I bet they've designed the room pink already. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's why it's so ingrained, because children
are so vigilant. But then parents should feel bad for doing that.
No, they shouldn't. But when we have the conversation around stereotype, we shouldn't be surprised.
But then if the child then wants to, when they get older and make a decision and they want to paint the wall blue, then let them.
But, yeah, has the damage already somewhat been done? If a child has grown up...
Oh, I don't care, because she's got the cutest little peach onesie that she's going to look so cute in.
It's really difficult.
It's so tough. Now she's always going to wear little peach clothes. She's going to look so cute.
But, Jimmy, that's the thing. Why didn't we buy her a football kit?
Because you'd have bought a Leeds United one and then her father would have burnt it.
But do you know what I mean? Like, the little boys get the little cute
So then saying
kits.
That, I did buy storybooks that weren't necessarily, they're not gender typical.
It's an interesting conversation and there's no right or wrong answer.
Actually, when I bought Becky her little present for her, I bought the pink set rather than the blue set.
There you go.
Because it went with the...
And colour's an early one, but then you look at TV programmes and you look at media that children are that age. Thing is, I'm not, surprise, I don't really watch kids' TV programmes.
What?
So I can't actually say how...
I don't know either.
How much they reinforce stereotypes. I don't know, once upon a time they did. If I remember when I was watching, I used to love Power Rangers in space, and you can bet your bottom dollar the pink and the yellow Power Ranger were girls. But do you see how that's enforcing then, that stereotype? The
Straight
Power
away,
Rangers
yeah.
that were cool and white were red and silver, blue. They were the boy ones. The coolest one, the main one, was the Red Ranger. And what's red often denoted for in society? It's anger, it's masculinity. Like, it's
so funny because I grew up in a household with my mum and my sister. So it's three girls, right? And don't get me wrong, we always still love watching the Gilmore Girls together. That was like our thing. But growing up, like from a young age, I was like, Bob the Builder was my favourite. Bob the Builder. Teletubbies, tweenies. Like, I don't feel like I watched really heavily feminine or female stereotyping programs. Excuse me. Which is really interesting, because you'd have thought growing up in a household with three women or three females, it would go that way.
Yeah.
Whereas I went to see Bob the Builder live twice.
Oh.
Yeah, twice. And I had a great time.
See, even growing up though, maybe Bob Builder's a bit late for me, but my favourite things were always the things that evolved around fighting. Always, like Power Rangers, Dragon Ball Z, even Pokemon. Like, it's literally animal dog fighting. When you think about it, we keep these animals in like little balls and then we let them out to have a fight. And then you move on to, you know, that and then I go into sport and it transitions into that. So I was very stereotypical when I came through. Mm. But as a child, I used to love, what's it called, Bambi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bambi and Peter Pan and that jazz. So something went wrong. And my mum was like, you will watch Dragon Ball Z.
He'll be a boy.
But no, it is interesting. And boys are naturally brought, I mean, I don't know, it is interesting.
And I don't think people are doing it wrong when they want their girls to dress girly and be girly. But when we get it wrong is when we don't celebrate their own interests and follow them.
Because then you think, oh, actually the boy was naturally like, he's naturally home towards wanting to watch that TV program, Power Rangers, let's say, because it's fighting and stuff. But then you think, actually, when he was 2 years old, dad used to play fight with him a lot.
Exactly.
But didn't play fight with the daughter, or in a different way. And then you think, well, then that's that inclination to want to fight and be masculine and play then builds onto his interest in watching TV. And like, so you think, oh, actually, sort of inherently, there was a massive environmental push towards that without actually ever realizing.
Yeah.
Just interesting. Yep. And then you could talk about, well, actually the body, we always talk about how the brain self-rewards itself through dopamine and other chemicals to build physically stronger bodies. That's why even like mammals, like lion cubs and stuff, they fight, they play fight. Yep. I did a post on Instagram talking about why do children skip? Because it's such a weird movement when you think about it. It's because the brain's rewarding itself for that physical development. And that comes from evolutionary processes of you needing to build your body to be bigger and stronger so you actually survive in the wild. Like, that's sort of where that comes from. That's why lion cubs.
Because lion cubs skip all the time.
No, but that's why they play fight and roll around in the savannah and fight at each other, because at that moment in time, they're incredibly vulnerable because they're fighting. They're not actually looking at the other threats around them.
No.
So why would evolutionary still have something that makes them so vulnerable at such a young age? Well, because of the benefit that it brings their muscles, and exactly. That's how they get ready to then kill so they can eat and survive. Humans are no different in the sense of that's why we skip and use, you know, the muscles in our legs in strange ways, because it challenges it more and builds that muscle, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the same in boys and girls. There's not a reason for that to be split in any way, shape, or form. So we don't have answers.
We don't. We just wanted to chat about it.
We just wanted to discuss.
But let us know your thoughts. Let us know your thoughts on what you're doing.
We've missed.
Probably. So, and like I said, as always, these are just our opinions.
It's a delicate and difficult conversation because, like I say, it's black and white. It's not black and white. There's no right or wrong answer.
No.
And a lot of it very much boils down to the context of that individual child. And if they happen to be a boy or girl and completely enjoy the stuff that conforms around stereotypes, so be it.
As long as the child is happy,
yeah,
then it shouldn't matter what they are doing, I think is what.
And even if we do, like, our children, regardless of the boys and girls, will go and watch Leeds United and they will enjoy it. They have no choice.
They'll come home from mum, please. So, let me go,
like,
again.
Sometimes enforcing stereotypes, it's absolutely fine.
No. And do you know what? If the child turns around and says, "Why is daddy so angry?" I'll be like, well, at least you understand emotion. But daddy's angry because they're not scoring any goals. Okay. End of. And on that note, that's us for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. Opened up a few more.
I hope you all had a brilliant bank holiday as well.
Yeah, love bank holiday. The sun was shining, so that's good.
We are talking at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, and it is still shining.
It is still shining.
Though we are.
We're expecting rain this afternoon.
I want to get out and clean my grass. Sounds such a weird thing to say, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's weird.
We've got AstroTurf, dogs weigh on it. We need to kill chemicals.
And on that lovely end of note, we hope you have the rest of the... Let's start that sentence again, Emily. We hope you enjoy the rest of your week.
Yes, back to work.
One. And we'll catch you in the next one.
Ciao, guys.
Bye.